He's a psychologist, an author, and a veteran broadcaster. But most importantly, he's a dad. Welcome to Dr. Bill Meyer Live on the Faith Radio Network. Stay tuned for a faith and culture connection, a biblical perspective on current events, and practical family advice with psychologist Dr. Bill Meyer. You can join the conversation by calling 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Now, let's join Bill Meyer live.
Well, are you confident about sharing your faith with non-believers? Many people want to talk to others about their Christian faith, but they're really anxious about being drawn into a confrontation, or maybe they worry they won't know the right thing to say. We live in such a cynical and skeptical age. How can we respond effectively who question Christianity and who may get right in our face? Maybe they're an atheist, maybe they're an agnostic, and they ask us tough questions, and I don't know how to respond to that. Well, this hour, we're going to be equipping you to do just that as we talk to an evangelist and author who is written a great new book on talking to skeptics. How do we do it effectively? How do we get more confident in our apologetics? And it's an approach that's maybe not been used that much in the past, and I think you'll appreciate it. I'm Bill Meyer, and it's so great to have you with us today on this Saturday, and we want to say hi to all of our great Faith Radio listeners. Hello to you if you're listening on Faith 1270 in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Maybe you're listening in Duluth on Faith 90.5 or in Madison, Wisconsin on Faith 1190. It is so great to have you part of our Faith Radio network. That little beep was my phone. I think I should silence it. If you'd like to call us, our number is 877-93-FAITH, and we would love to hear from you. In fact, if you call us this hour and give us your contact info, your name, address, phone number, email address, we will enter you into a drawing for a copy of the book, How to Talk to a Skeptic, written by my guest this hour. So stick around for that, and again, give us your contact info by calling us. Our website is myfaithradio.com. You can get all the info on this program and all the other programs that we air. And every week, I do my best. I'm a family psychologist, and what I do is I go through the research. I go through some of the stories about families and children and marriage, and I try to find things that I think would be helpful to you. And found some interesting stories this week. And actually, this one deals with adoption. We heard about International Adoption Week coming up, and if you've been feeling a bit discouraged about the direction our country is headed, I found this story that may renew your faith in the American people. It's about a little boy. He's actually a teenager. He's 15 years old. His name is Davian Henry Only. He's from St. Petersburg, Florida. Davian's mom was a convicted felon, and he was born in prison, and he was raised in foster care. He lives in a group home with 12 other boys, and he has never had his own room or felt wanted. Well, when he heard that his birth mother had died last spring, he decided to find someone to adopt him. So he went to St. Mark Missionary Baptist Church in St. Petersburg, Florida, and he told his story from the pulpit. He told the congregation, "I know God hasn't given up on me, so I'm not giving up either." Well, Davian's story was published in the Tampa Bay Times, and then it went viral on social media and was picked up on news sites and TV shows around the country, actually all around the world. And now, more than 10,000 people have offered to adopt him. That was as of last week. I'm guessing that number has gone up now. 10,000 people from every state in the country have contacted the social service agency that handles his case and said, "We'd like to adopt Davian." In fact, his case manager, Connie Going, says she is just overwhelmed by the response. Does that put a smile on your face or what? Man, that is so encouraging. Found some other faith news that you're probably aware of if you've been listening to Faith Radio much during the last week or two. Billy Graham is turning 95 this coming week, next week, and Franklin Graham, his son, says hundreds of thousands of Christians are planning to invite their friends to watch the telecast of My Hope America with Billy Graham this coming Thursday. Billy spent months recording the video. It's going to be broadcast on November 7th, which is his birthday, and Franklin says his father was unscripted and comes across like a grandfather, sharing the gospel and inviting viewers to trust Jesus as their Savior. If you'd like more info on the TV special and how you can learn about Billy Graham and the video and inviting people into your home to hear his gospel message, you can go to My Hope America. Actually, go to billygraham.org and then click on the My Hope America link. billygraham.org and look for the banner that says My Hope America. We do receive emails here at Faith Radio, and got one from Kristen. Kristen lives in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, and she says, "Dear Dr. Bill, my boyfriend and I are in our early 30s, and we are considering a long-term relationship." I'm hearing something come down the line here, so I don't know what that was. But hearing some strange sounds. So she says, "My boyfriend and I are in our early 30s, and we're considering a long-term relationship. He's a great guy, except for one thing, his party friends. She says, I totally disagree with how they live, act, and believe, yet he insists on hanging out with them. My boyfriend and I try to pursue clean, positive, healthy lifestyles, but these friends, both male and female, don't. And while my boyfriend doesn't partake in their extracurricular activities, I feel anxiety every time he spends time with them. What should I do?" Well, Kristen, great question. I have talked to other women, single women, who have dealt with the same type of situation. They're dating a guy they really care about, but they have major concerns about his maturity or his character or his behavior. And I will tell you the same thing I've told them. If you're expecting that he is going to change for the better after you're engaged or married, that his behavior that you're seeing now is going to change, you may be setting yourself up for frustration and disappointment. We have a saying in psychology, the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. In other words, don't expect him to change. What you see may very well be what you get. And the Bible has a lot to say about this situation, about the company we keep and how our friendships influence us for the good or for the bad. Proverbs says that a man who spends time with wise friends becomes wise, but a companion of fools suffers harm. Ooh, boy. And the fact that your boyfriend insists on spending time with these friends that, well, maybe we could call them fools or foolish in some way, that should be a major red flag for you. I would encourage you, Kristen, ask yourself a hard question. Why are you involved with this guy in the first place? There are many women who wind up with guys who are bad for them because of their own early family experiences. I'm wondering what the relationship was like with your own father. And maybe it's time to do a little bit of soul searching about your family of origin and to begin seriously praying about the kind of man that God would want you to marry. So thanks for writing, Kristen. I hope that's helpful. You can find some more helpful advice on this whole issue of Christian singles and dating at the Focus on the Family website. They have a great area for singles and folks in their 20s and 30s called Boundless. So just go to focusonthefamily.org, look for the Boundless link. Well, it's 12 minutes past the hour, and as we mentioned, this hour we're going to be focusing on how we share our faith with skeptics. How do we talk to people who maybe are atheists or agnostic and are really in our face asking us some challenging questions about our Christianity? Maybe some of the old ways that we've used for years aren't the most effective in today's world. We'll be talking to an author and evangelist who has some great insights on that up next here on the Faith Radio Network.
We were talking last time about the assignment of homework to children in the elementary school years. Though many educators and parents will disagree with me, I think time spent studying after school should be very limited for the reasons I mentioned yesterday. In addition, homework generates a considerable amount of stress for parents. Many kids either won't do the assignments or they get tired and they whine about them. Tensions build and angry words fly. I'm convinced that child abuse occurs at that point for some children. When my wife Shirley was teaching second grade, one little girl came to school with both eyes black and swollen. She said her father had beaten her because she couldn't learn her spelling words. That's illegal now, of course, but it was tolerated then. The poor youngster will remember those beatings for a lifetime and will always think of herself as stupid. Then there are the parents who do the assignments for their kids just to get them over the hump. Have you ever worked for 2 weeks on a fifth grade geography project for your 11-year-old and then learned later that you got a C on it? That's the ultimate humiliation. In short, I believe homework in elementary school is appropriate for learning multiplication tables, spelling words, and test review. It's also helpful in training kids to remember assignments, bring home books, and complete them as required. But to load them down night after night with monotonous bookwork is to invite educational burnout.
There's more Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson at MyFamilyTalk.com.
It's Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio. Get ready to join the conversation. Now let's join Dr. Bill Meyer live.
Hey, welcome back. Our phone number, 877-93-FAITH, 877-93-FAITH. Just spell it out in your phone. And our website, myfaithradio.com. We would love to hear from you today if you've got any questions for our guest or if you want to enter into that drawing for a copy of one of his books. We have three copies of the book, How to Talk to a Skeptic, which we'll be giving away at the end of the hour. And joining us is the author of that book, Donald Johnson. He's the president of Don Johnson Evangelistic Ministries. Don has a BA in Theology, Missions, and Intercultural Studies from San Jose Christian College, an MA in Christian Apologetics from Biola University, my alma mater, and an MA in Theology from Franciscan University of Steubenville. Don and his wife live in Southern California. He has four kids. And Don, welcome to Faith Radio.
Great to be with you, Bill. Thank you.
I'm very excited about this book. This is a different approach to evangelism. In the past, we've kind of had this tendency as evangelical Christians to study these great books like, you know, More Than a Carpenter and memorize these responses to atheists or agnostics about the Christian faith and memorize the four spiritual laws. And yet it seems that in our modern world, those methods are no longer effective or as effective. Am I accurate?
Yeah, I think you are correct, at least in many ways. A lot of times those methods come across, unfortunately, as a method. And the skeptic, the unbeliever, tends to view the Christian as someone who is treating them as a project. And it's almost like an input-output machine. You know, they come and talk to the skeptic, and the skeptic says this, and then the Christian says this, you know, and you're kind of going through your checklist of, right, how am I supposed to respond? You know, can I remember the answer at this point? And, yeah, it doesn't come across as very relational. And, unfortunately, I think a lot of times it doesn't come across at all because people have a hard time memorizing all those answers, and they get stressed about, well, what if I don't know the right answer? And so a lot of times I think that actually keeps evangelism from happening at all. So, yeah, it's a different culture these days, and those methods, well, good, I think need to be tweaked a little bit.
Now, did you start off, obviously you're an evangelist now, did you start off using that methodology and then kind of gravitate to more of the Socratic questioning method?
I have definitely moved over the years to a different model. I never tried necessarily to do sort of a cut-and-paste model, but I did notice that a simple presentation of the gospel or simply answering some of their objections wasn't being all that effective, especially, I mean, I've been doing this for, you know, going on 20 years now. The last 8 to 10 years, I think, have become much more difficult, and the questions have become tougher, people have become more cynical, and you really have to, I think, change your approach a little bit in the new culture where people are much more skeptical and cynical, I think.
And then, of course, we've got the rise of the neo-atheist movement, and I'm sure you're very familiar with those, mostly men, I would say, and how they have had best-selling books and the media, their media darlings. They have just been, you know, held up as these wonderful, you know, virtuous, brilliant individuals who question this outdated, you know, superstitious Christianity. And yet, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems as if many of their objections are really nothing new. They've been around for a long time.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Bill. They're not coming up with new objections, nor are they actually interacting with any of the good answers that Christianity has developed to those objections over the past 2,000 years. It is rather a rather surfacey anti-Christian attitude, I think, that they have. But it's actually more the attitude. I think those guys have had a huge impact, but it's not so much in the intellectual content of their objections, but in their attitude and in their blatant anti-Christian approach to the world, which I think that's somewhat new. I mean, you know, in the old days, you might have your uncle come for Thanksgiving and he wouldn't be a believer, but he wouldn't bring that up at the table. Now, he's likely to bring that up. He's likely to start throwing out objections. And that's, I think, something that's new in our culture, that people are more openly anti-Christian.
Now, do you see any kind of a cultural shift because of both the neo-atheist movement, the anti-Christian bias of many of the media outlets? Are you, and I have not looked at any of the new Barna research, but are we starting to see a shift away from, you know, America used to be considered, you know, rightly or wrongly, a Christian nation, where the vast majority of people would say, at the very least, they believed in God. They believed the Bible was inspired or true or mostly true. But are we starting to see now a culture of more and more skepticism, more and more unbelief, or just frankly, I don't care. It doesn't, you know, have anything to do with my life.
Yeah, I think both. I mean, the numbers, I have looked at some of the numbers, and I do a lot of college campus ministry, and the numbers with the youth I find distressing. They are definitely becoming more skeptical, a lot more ardent atheists, a lot more, maybe not so much in other religions, but definitely moving away from the church, I think, and certainly the nuns, you know, agnostics, and just I don't affiliate with any sort of belief system, a lot of those kind of people. So I think the numbers, yeah, are definitely rising, not in Christianity's favor.
Now, was there anything in particular in your own work, your own ministry, your own life that caused you to say, you know what, we really need to change our approach? Was it more of a gradual understanding, or was there a critical incident that you said, gosh, this just isn't working and I got to figure out a different methodology?
Yeah, I think on one hand, it was gradual. I started doing radio shows in the late 90s, taking calls from skeptics. And as that developed, after each show, I would kind of sit back and say, well, how did that conversation go? You'd get some atheist leader on the show, and you'd think, well, that went off the rails. And over the years, I've noticed that, I try to evaluate each conversation, and I'd think something went wrong there. I had, the wrong presuppositions going in, or I didn't direct the conversation in the right way, or maybe I couldn't direct the conversation in any way. I just reacted the whole time. And they were basically in control of the conversation. So, yeah, a lot of reflection that way, coming away from these conversations where, you know, the people got angry, or they just felt like, well, I just, you know, destroyed Don in that debate. And I got to think, well, gee, did I even really want to debate? do I want to think that I have lost, or do I want to get these people angry? So I did sort of gradually really try to think hard about what went wrong in each conversation. And I think actually the final impetus was for me to really solidify what's a better approach. I started getting asked by a lot of believers here in Southern California and around the world, but they'd email me, but they'd ask me to come to their church or their conference. Can you, we're having a hard time speaking to our friends, our relatives, our coworkers. Can you help us talk to skeptics? And as I put together some of those seminars, I realized, yeah, you know what, this is right. And then when I would present the seminars, the response was overwhelming. Like, they were, Don, yes, you know, give us the notes. this is great. That's actually what ended up leading to the book, is that people kept asking for the notes for these seminars. And I thought, well, maybe we're onto something. And I also noticed that as I tried to implement some of these principles, the conversations did go a lot better. So there has been sort of some peak moments over the years, and also this gradual movement toward a more relational, conversational approach.
Now, I'm excited to hear that you're saying there is a felt need, at least among many evangelical churches, to get better equipped, more effective in sharing our faith. But my perspective, and you correct me if you think I'm wrong here, my perspective is that among the greater masses of evangelicals, born-again Christians, there are a lot of folks that get somewhat defensive when they are asked about their faith, or, you know, just to defend their Christianity, because they don't feel they have the answers, and that causes them to react emotionally. I'm thinking of that classic bumper sticker, which I still see from time to time. What is it? God said it, I believe it, that settles it. And right. that approach in 2013 ain't going to cut it, is it?
No, it really isn't. No. Yeah, I think there is that approach, that idea that, well, I'm just going to believe, and maybe I don't have all the answers, but that's okay. I'm just going to take it on some sort of blind faith. And if somebody comes to me with objections, well, I'll just, you know, reject them. And yeah, that, I mean, it's not a good way. I mean, you know this, Bill. That's not a good way to lead your Christian life, for one thing. I mean, you got to have some solid intellectual foundations for what you believe. You should know why you believe what you believe. And God is a God, I think, who gives us reasons and wants us to think through these things. But then, especially when you're trying to share your faith, I mean, I think of people who come to my door as missionaries and say, well, you know, just pray about it. Just, you know, it's not really any evidence sort of thing, or I can't really give you any reasons, but just believe. Well, that goes nowhere with me, and it certainly goes nowhere with the large majority of skeptics. I mean, all they think is, oh, yeah, Christianity is a religion where you have to put your brain in your back pocket and you don't have any answers. And, well, who wants that? Yeah, nobody. They, especially when you've got all these hardcore popular atheists on TV writing their books saying the exact same thing. You know, don't be stupid, think rationally and reasonably, and become an atheist. That message in the culture, you know, we need to be able to fight that as Christians.
Do you think, if you give a percentage of the number of denominations, the number of, let's say, Christians or Christian churches across the country, can you give any kind of a general percentage of how many are really interested in this topic and pursuing it, let's say, from the pulpit versus those that sort of have that settles it attitude?
Yeah, I don't have percentages. I know that there is sort of an apologetics community that is growing and is becoming more popular, and they are making inroads in church. But I also know that same community is still largely frustrated with some of the approaches. You know, they're having a hard time getting the local pastors to see that, hey, apologetics is a good thing. We need to be able to ground our faith and equip believers to be able to share their faith in an intellectually satisfying way. So I don't know what the percentage would be. I know that the apologetics movement and apologetics evangelism, guys like Lee Strobel are doing a great job combining apologetics and evangelism. It's not just, you know, for college professors anymore. The average person, and that's really what this book is about. It's about helping the average person be an evangelist who can use apologetics. That movement is growing, although, you know, those of us in that community would love to see it expand a little quicker, I guess.
Well, I would too, and it's tragic because it really leaves out a very important part of Scripture, and that's loving God with all of our mind. And unfortunately, there are some who say, well, I love Him with my heart, but they check their mind at the door, and then they get in these situations with a friend or coworker or relative, and they are backed into a corner. They don't have any answers. It may even cause them to doubt, or at the very least, it can seriously rupture that relationship. And of course, that's tragic in and of itself. So I am so glad to hear you say, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, no, I was just thinking, you know, we all know the stats about young evangelical kids who go to college and lose their faith. Well, a major reason for that is that they haven't been given those good reasons, and then they get to college and they're forced to have to have answers and they don't have them. So yeah, you're exactly right, though.
Yeah, and that goes to show how many parents are falling down on the job, and maybe many youth ministries that are all about pizza and volleyball and not about equipping young people to go off to a secular college or university and share their faith and really be confident. We're talking to John Johnson. He is the author of How to Talk to a Skeptic, just a wonderful new book from Bethany House Publishers. I want to recommend this to every Christian listening today, every pastor. This is a book that will help you in your Christian walk and make you more confident. We're going to unpack the book some more with Don here on the Faith Radio Network, so we encourage you to stick with us. Our phone number, 877-93-FAITH, if you have a question for Don.
triumphs.
God triumphs over evil. Listen to Bible teacher John Monroe with today's Bible Minute.
Calvary's cross reveals what God is like. He's a God of love. He's a God we can trust. He's a God who comes to save and to forgive us. And He is a God who triumphs over evil. So, what is your personal response to this problem of evil? Well, you must admit that evil is not just out there. It is in here, in your heart. You need cleansing. You need a new beginning. You need a power which is greater than yourself, a power greater than sin, than evil, than Satan. The power of the living Christ, who not only died for your sins, but who indwells those who receive Him as their Savior and Lord. If you've never done it, will you trust Him now as your personal Savior?
God wants a personal relationship with you. Come to backtothebible.org and click on Jesus Who. Continues right now, and we want to hear from you. Call us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Now, here's Dr. Bill Meyer again on Faith Radio.
And welcome back. It's 11:32, and we thank you for making us part of your Saturday here on the Faith Radio Network, our website, myfaithradio.com. And, of course, you can hear us all throughout the Upper Midwest, including on our flagship station in Minneapolis, Faith 900. If you are listening in Minneapolis, St. Paul, or anywhere in the Minnesota, the main part of our listening area, which I guess is just humongous. If you look at KTIS's signal, Faith 900 signal, just blasting out across central Minnesota, we appreciate so much our great engineers who help us get the word out to folks throughout our great state. And my guest this hour is Donald Johnson. He's the president of Don Johnson Evangelistic Ministries. He is the author of a fantastic new book, How to Talk to a Skeptic. I'm going to brag on Don for just a second here, because here's what Peter Kreeft says about Don's book. This is one of the most practical books of apologetics I have ever read. It is also one of the most profound. Wow, that's quite a compliment, my friend.
You know what? I was blown away when Dr. Kreeft sent that over to me. I'm a huge fan of the guy. I quote him often during the book, and for him to say that, really, I told him at the time, well, if nobody else likes the book, hey, I'm happy right now. So yeah, that was a great gracious statement.
Well, let's dive in to some of the and really we're talking more about questions than answers here, and again We're looking at a different methodology of apologetics, of evangelism. It's not the old memorize answers about the authority of Scripture or the truth of the resurrection, or not that those things aren't important. We should certainly know that. But we're talking about a method of asking probing questions to the skeptic and, in a sense, leading them to the end of their own rope, I guess, which is that an accurate description?
Yeah, you really do want to not just be on the defensive the whole time. You know, you don't just want to be the person who is always reacting to whatever the skeptic says. That really never leads to, I think, a fruitful conversation. So yeah, what I do at the beginning is always ask a lot of questions and do a lot of listening. And in particular, ask a lot of questions about what they believe to be true about the world, about the big questions of life. I really try to keep the conversation really big picture. You know, don't get bogged down. You know, like you said, as much as we need to have answers to questions about the Bible and the resurrection and all that, I never talk about those things up front. You know, I say I'm more than happy to talk about them, but first let's talk about what kind of world we live in. You know, how do we get here? Why are we here? How should we live then? What type of morality should we have? What happens when we die? Is there a solution to evil? I really try to focus on the big questions and do a lot of listening to what the skeptic believes and get them thinking about those big issues. And that really helps them, well, it helps to frame the argument or the discussion, not really an argument, but frame the discussion in a more effective way, I think.
Now, you say that there are some major mistakes that Christians make when they start to talk to a non-believer or to a skeptic. What are those boo-boos?
Well, I think for me, in my own experience, I would often get bogged down reacting. And so we would end up debating about not insignificant subjects, but subjects that really you end up talking past the person. And so that's one of the big ones, is just talking before framing the conversation properly. Often, another one I had is that I didn't really have the proper goals going into the conversation, or I hadn't really thought about the goals. What am I trying to do here with this conversation? Am I trying to win an argument? Am I trying to get this person converted? Am I trying to convince them that Christianity will be good for them? Or, you know, what exactly am I doing? A lot of times I think as believers, we haven't really thought through what we're trying to accomplish. And when we haven't thought through what we're trying to accomplish, well, it's very hard to get there. You don't know how you're going to do that. So a lot of the book is about thinking through, what are the proper goals here? What do we want to do in this conversation? And then, are there some steps we can take to get there? And I think actually there are, and they're relatively easy. It's not like you have to be a super smart philosophy expert. You can just ask a couple of good questions, and you can direct the conversation using them.
What should our goal be? Should it be to lead that person to Christ right there, to plant a seed, to respond to their objections, to show them that we're, you know, not crazy, that we are, and that we're winsome, that we care about them? Or are all of those goals good things?
Yeah, I think all of those are good things, and they're somewhat not secondary goals, but I think ultimately if we can frame the conversation as a search for truth, that we want to know accurate answers about those big questions of life that I was talking about. If you can enter into a conversation as a truth seeker, and you can get the skeptics to sign off on that, you know, like, well, really, shouldn't we be seeking the truth about these big questions of life? I mean, that's ultimately what this is all about. And unless we have answers to those questions, well, all of these other issues and all the other objections that you have, they're not going to make sense until we first sort of talk about this big picture stuff. And so I think, yeah, we want to go into it as a final end, obviously. We want this person to follow Jesus, and we want to be a light, and we want to be all those other things. But I think as sort of a short-term goal, we should attempt to frame the conversation as a search for truth, and that we want to know what is most likely to be true about reality. You know, what kind of world do we live in? And I think that really helps to then direct the conversation in a way that will get the skeptic to think, and also open a door then for you to share the truth of the gospel.
So let's flesh that out a bit. Let's say you are sitting on an airplane, and the guy next to you says, "So what do you do for a living?" And you say, "I'm an evangelist, and I yep. host a radio show, and I talk about objections to Christianity." And they say to you, "How can you believe in that myth? Mike, you know, we're so far beyond that in the year 2013 that, you know, Christianity's been disproven by so many different people, and it's just bogus. And how can you be so blind?" And so what's the first thing you say?
Yeah, I think, well, first, I probably wouldn't use the term evangelist. That's a good conversation killer right there. If you want to shut down, if you want to have a nice quiet flight, tell the person that you're a pastor and evangelist. That's usually going to finish it. I would probably tell them that I host a radio show and that I write books about the big questions of life. You know, I like to talk to people about the big questions of life. And then if they said, well, you know, what religion are you coming from or whatever, I would say, oh yeah, I'm a Christian. You know, and then if they presented what you just said, you know, how can you believe in those myths and stuff? And I would say, well, I think there's a lot of good answers for those kind of questions. But first, tell me a little bit about where you're coming from. I mean, I'm interested in talking about all sorts of belief systems. And I always love to hear about where the other person is coming from. So, I mean, do you have a history of Christianity, I would ask them? I mean, did you grow up in the church? A lot of people have. A lot of the most ardent skeptics that we have bad experiences in the church as a youth, and they've left them. And I would ask them, all right, and so you've rejected Christianity, or maybe you have no experience with it. Tell me a little bit about what you do believe then. I get that you think that it's false, but tell me, what do you think is true? That's really interesting to me. I always like to explore different answers to these big questions of life. And so I would try to frame it that way, do a lot of listening to where they're coming from. And you don't usually get shut down by asking questions, because people – don't actually get a lot of questions asked of them, usually. Usually people want to just tell you, I'll tell you about myself, you know, and then you have to listen a lot. But to just open up and say, well, no, you tell me about yourself, it shows that you care about that person. It shows that you're interested. And, hey, people do like to talk about themselves usually. And so that usually opens a door to hearing a little bit about where they're coming from. When you do that, then you can inevitably, you know, they'll have some bad experience that they'll share, or they'll say, well, this Christianity that I know of is this and this and this. And then that gives you an opportunity to step in and say, oh, okay, well, that's interesting. You know, I appreciate you sharing. That's not my experience, and that's not what I think Christianity teaches. So let me help you, you know, where I'm coming from, share a little bit. So I would probably frame the conversation that way.
And I'm guessing also that if that in that conversation the person talks about how they've been hurt by an experience in the church, maybe there was hypocrisy, maybe there was even spiritual abuse of some kind, that we always should empathize. We should say, I'm so sorry that happened to you. That's not the Jesus that I know. That's not the Bible that I know. So that they realize that, you know, we're not somehow endorsing the terrible things that have happened to them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know some people just they apologize on behalf of the church. I think that's a good step. Yeah, I don't actually, you know, in those opening moments of the conversation, and often this conversation, I mean, if you're on an airplane, I guess you've got an hour or whatever, but often these conversations can take months. And so over time, as you build relationships with your neighbor or your relative or your coworker, and you get to know where they're coming from, at the beginning, I don't usually try to defend Christianity at all. You know, I don't jump right in when they say, oh, I've been hurt, and say, oh, well, that's not everybody. You know, I just let them share if they have some objections to Christian doctrine or whatever. I just let them share. I don't jump in again with a defense. Ultimately, I'm trying to really learn accurately what they believe and where they're coming from, and then I'll step into comparing that with Orthodox traditional Christianity. And only after I have shared both sides, and you know where the skeptic's coming from, you know where you're coming from, then we can get into a defense or an explanation. So, yeah, it's tough because, you know, with our pride, and we want to jump in and say, well, no, that's not right. But over time I've learned, you know what, if you just let the person vent a little bit at the beginning, that's actually, you know, pretty healthy, and you don't have to have that quick defense.
Now, when you do ask the question, you know, what do you believe? What's your own worldview? Is there a kind of a common response that you see? And I'm not talking about, you know, when you come across a diehard neo-atheist or even someone who's maybe has a different religious background. You're talking to a Muslim or a Hindu or a Buddhist. But just the average Joe in America today who's a non-believer, do they actually have a response, or are they just not thought that through? And if they do have a response, what is it typically when you say, what do you believe?
No, you're right, Bill. Actually, they don't usually have a response. They haven't thought through. And that's why it's vitally important to ask those questions at the beginning, because most of the time they're just anti-Christian. They just reject Christianity, but not because they have a better alternative. They just reject Christianity. So to get them to think about, well, what positive beliefs do you have, really opens up a whole bunch of doors, because most of the time they haven't. Sometimes they'll say stuff like, well, I believe in science, or I believe, you know, they maybe have thought through it a little bit. But when you get them thinking along those lines, it really helps to undermine some of their confidence ultimately, because you say, well, listen, I understand that you don't believe in Christianity. Okay, fair enough. But tell me what you do believe. Often it's, well, nothing. And if you're trying to debate a Christian from a position of, well, I guess I don't have anything, already, you know, that has brought down a lot of defenses, and that's really opened up to get them to think, okay, am I really the rational, reason-based, you know, person that I thought I was if I don't have a positive case for anything? And you haven't had to defend Christianity at all at that point. All you've said is, well, tell me what you believe is true. Most of the time, yeah, they don't haven't really thought that through.
Our guest is Don Johnson. He is the author of How to Talk to a Skeptic. And if you have a question for Don, or if you'd like to enter the drawing for one of his books, we'd invite you to give us a call right now. Our phone number is 877-93-FAITH, 877-93-FAITH. It's 1146. You are listening to the Faith Radio Network. I'm Bill Meyer, and we'll have more with Don and dive into some of those questions that we might want to ask up next here on the Faith Radio Network.
The schedule? I could do this. The price? It looks affordable. The classwork? Well, it's tough, but I can do it. And the difference that a college degree can make in my life? I want to do this.
The Adult Undergraduate Program at University of Northwestern will help you finish your degree in a convenient, affordable, faith-based setting and become all you were created to be. Check it out at unwsp.edu. University of Northwestern, St. Paul. Learn, lead, invest, impact. If this is the year that you've decided to take a serious, in-depth look at the Bible, visit myfaithradio.com and sign up to win the MacArthur Study Bible. Dr. John MacArthur has compiled more than 20,000 study notes to create the MacArthur Study Bible. We will be giving away one Bible each month. Visit our website, myfaithradio.com, and click on Study Bible Giveaway.
On the next Everyday Relationships.
Perhaps you tune into the show and think, maybe today's the day that they'll address my issue. And so far, we haven't gotten there. Well, there's good news, because we want to address your question. In fact, all you have to do is call us at 855-2-RELATE during the program, and we'll talk about whatever's on your mind.
Everyday Relationships. Real life, real talk. Weekdays at 4 on Faith Radio.
To Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio.
Welcome back. My guest is Don Johnson, the author of How to Talk to a Skeptic. Great new book. Here's what Doug Grootheis, the author of Christian Apologetics, says. This impressive book combines clear thinking, good writing, and apologetics zeal. Bravo. Wow. I'm just reading all these endorsements of the book, Doug. I'm just amazed at how many big names love your stuff.
Yeah, I was amazed too, to be honest. They're very gracious individuals. We got a lot of really good endorsements. I was very pleased. God was gracious.
Well, and that just, again, I think, tells our listeners what an important book this is and why you need to pick it up. Again, the book is available. It's brand new. It's out from Bethany House Publishers, and you can learn more about it. Actually, we should mention your website. Don, would you give that for us?
Yeah, it's donjohnsonministries.org.
Donjohnsonministries.org to find out more about Don's work and the book. And you can purchase a copy. And if you are in church leadership, if you're a pastor, if you're an elder, if you're leading a small group, my gracious, this is a book you want to get and read and share with your friends. Wouldn't it be great, Don, if books like yours and maybe, you know, some of Tim Keller's books were the books that we got into the hands of every Christian in America, and we could get them to turn off the TV for a few hours each week and just dive in and equip themselves.
I would love that. I would love that. We're hoping. I think the movement is growing. You know, I actually heard, I mean, not to name drop, but another, I heard from Lee Strobel the other day, and he's making this book required reading in his evangelism class at Houston Baptist University. And, you know, working with guys like Lee and some other folks, we are trying to get it as a curriculum. Like, we would love this to go into your church in, if you've got 5 weeks, 10 weeks, 1 week, whatever, to really focus on apologetics and evangelism and how they can go together. Yeah, that would be amazing.
Hmm. Let's dive into a few of those questions, those key questions that you might ask the skeptic, which we talked about the first broad one, what do you believe? But there are some others that maybe drill down a bit. And what might you ask to sort of get the skeptic thinking?
Yeah, I ask worldview questions. I'm trying to get them to think about the nature of reality. So, and I think there's really, you can deal or boil them down to sort of five. How did we get here? Why are we here? Why is there evil in the world? is there a solution to evil, and what happens when we die? If you can get the skeptic to think about those big questions, and especially if you can think about them in sort of a narrative form, like tell me the story of the world as you understand it, from the beginning to the end. If you can get them just to think about their answers to those questions, and everybody has answers, whether or not they've thought about them, everybody lives having beliefs about those questions. And so, you know, if you're just living every day, you know, like you said, watching TV and moving from that to the video game and from that to some other distraction, probably you think that we are just random pieces of matter and when you die, that's it and life is meaningless. Well, getting people to just clarify that in their own minds is really helpful to then compare that worldview to the Christian story. How does Christianity present answers to those questions of life? And so, yeah, those are sort of the big five that I try to get people to answer.
Okay, so again, let's say the airplane conversation, you ask the person, so, you know, what do you believe? How do you believe that life came about and what, you know, the meaning of life is? And they say, well, really, I don't think there's any big meaning. I think we were this just cosmic accident. These random atoms came together and life spontaneously evolved. And I believe in Darwinism. And I believe that, you know, we're rational creatures and that we can solve the world's problems if we just get smart enough. And I think all this Christianity stuff you're talking about is one big fat myth. So where do you go from there?
Yeah, then I would actually ask them to describe the Christianity that they know. Well, tell me what you think about, you know, I'm interested that you reject Christianity. First, tell me how you understand it. And so, again, before jumping in to defend, I would ask, all right, I understand where you're coming from, the materialistic, naturalistic worldview, that's great. Tell me a little bit about the Christianity that you have rejected. And so get them to answer those questions as they understand Christianity to teach them. And from there, then, I would have to go in and clarify. And you'd say, okay, well, that's, you know, that's great. That's interesting. Thank you. That's not what I believe. So let me, I suppose possibly they might have the right answer. I've never run into a skeptic who has a correct understanding of Christianity, honestly. So
what do they typically say? What's the typical response there, Don, that the skeptic might give when
They generally, as sort of a general rule, they will have a view of God that says he is an arbitrary, capricious taskmaster who created the world for no good reason, created people so that they could be his minions and jump through hoops, and he gave them a bunch of silly rules, and then, I don't know, for some reason he chooses one group of people to go and kill a bunch of others, and then in the end, I guess he picks some people who can go to heaven, but not for any good reason, not because they've been better than anybody else, just sort of randomly picks people because they believe irrational things, and the rest of the people he throws to hell, again, for no good reason. It's all very unjust and capricious. That's usually the story of Christianity as a skeptic understands it, give or take. And that really sort of helps you understand why they're rejecting it then. And it gives you an opportunity to go in and say, all right, no, this is how I understand the story. It does all make sense. It does all fit together. And that's actually a key. I mean, I spend a large section in the middle of the book just sort of clarifying what Orthodox Christianity teaches about some of these things. Because as you mentioned, Bill, a lot of times Christians are not equipped to even present the Christian story in a coherent way. And so that's a very key part of the conversation. Again, before we get to any debates or anything, let's help clarify how the story fits together. God's not this capricious meanie. He's not the schoolyard bully. He's a loving father. But the skeptic generally doesn't understand that.
Hmm. Okay, we're just about out of time. I'm sorry to say, Don, we've just scratched the surface of the book. But in the final 2 minutes or so, give us a quick overview of how you might present the Christian story to the skeptic.
Yeah, I do start with the beginning, and I tell that it's all about love. And the whole story, love is the basic, essential truth of reality, and everything else flows from that. And so then I talk about why God would require worship and sacrifice and how that fits into love. I won't be able to get into that now, but there's chapters on that in the book. And then just go through the flow from choosing Israel to what Jesus does for us and how he loves us and how there's I really try to contrast Adam, the first Adam, and the second Adam, and how the whole story is about God creating family and how he wants us to live with him in close relationship forever. and that everything he did from the very beginning to the very end is moving towards that goal. And so, yeah, it's all about love. And in that sense, you know, we're not changing that traditional model of evangelism. You know, God loves you and does have a wonderful plan for your life. It's just that we don't present that in four quick points at the beginning. We do it in a more relational way that actually answers then the questions of the skeptic rather than debates them.
I appreciate so much that you start with love, because in today's world, that's going to take us a lot further than debating the fine points of are the Gospels reliable, which, of course, is important.
Absolutely. But, yeah, start with love. Yeah.
Well, we're going to wrap things up for today, Don. I'd love to have you on again at some point. I know you're a busy man with your books and your speaking and your own radio show, but we could maybe, if you have time, maybe a few months from now, we can revisit the book and we can dive into some of the other questions and answers, because I think this is so important for every believer to understand. And unfortunately, as we said earlier, there's a lot of people, a lot of believers that aren't equipped. And it's the, I believe it, you know, God said it, I believe it, that settles it, approach, which is very ineffective and turns more people off than wins them to Christ. And it saddens me greatly. So, Don, let me give your website once again. Is it Don or Donald Johnson Ministries? I'm sorry.
Yeah, just Don, DonJohnsonMinistries.org. And yeah, I would love to come back on the show, Bill. It's been great talking to you.
Great. Please, and if you want to learn more about Don and his book and his work, maybe invite him to come to your church to teach your congregation how to do this. Maybe you'd like to have him come to your school. And Don, I know you're out there on the road a lot, so may the Lord continue to guide you and direct you in your work and your ministry. And thank you so much for this very, very important book.
I appreciate it, Bill. Thanks for having me on today.
Don Johnson, the author of How to Talk to a Skeptic from Bethany House Publishers. I'm Bill Meyer. That wraps things up for today. We appreciate you spending the day with us. I want to invite you to tune in to my good friend Neil Stavem on Monday. Very important program looking at military spouses. You know, any marriage will benefit by knowing and speaking each other's love language, but being married and being in the military offers extra challenges to a relationship. And best-selling author Dr. Gary Chapman has written a book on this topic. Neil and Gary will dive into that, the 5 love languages for military families, on Monday's Connecting Faith. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week.